Welcome back, everybody, to the Be Better podcast. We are once again back here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have back with us our co-host, Gabby.
Fresh off the plane.
Fresh off the plane and avoiding all the coronavirus out there.
I was just going to say that. I didn't know if we should bring that up or not.
Too soon?
Maybe too soon.
Yeah, we'll stick away from that. We already had our virus show about getting sick.
And yeah.
Talked about all the ickies that can be on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
And how you avoid those. But we have with us a very special friend today. We have on the phone calling us from Florida. We have our friend Sarah McLarty. Sarah, welcome to the Be Better podcast.
Hi, Gabby. Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, we really appreciate you. You're calling us from Florida. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Smack dab in the middle of it.
So what part of Florida are you from?
I am from DeLand, but I've been a Clermont, Florida resident for 11 or 12 years now. So that's home for me.
Wow. Very cool. What brought you to Clermont then?
You know, that's a funny story. Random chain of events one week I was living with my parents after moving out of the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs because I had a foot injury and it was very mentally challenging to be around people training for the Beijing Olympics when you had pretty much realized your chance was gone.
Yeah.
I think my parents realized I was getting a little too comfortable at 24 or 25 years old. And a week later I was signing a contract that I bought a house and I was just like, what just happened?
You went from zero to grown up.
Yeah, I know. But it has just been the best accidental decision or whatever that could have happened.
So now Clermont's home.
It is. And it's fabulous. I love it.
That's cool. Great. And Sarah, that you and I have known each other for quite a while in a number of different forms when you were racing, as a pro, and as you were beginning your coaching, I guess you've always been a swim coach for a long time. But we met back in the Optum days when you came and did your Swim Like a Pro clinic with us early on.
I did in the infancy of Swim Like a Pro. Had no idea where that would have gone in the next years to get me to where it is now. So pretty cool.
That was super fun. I was telling Gabby, showing Gabby we still have the promotional poster in my garage from that, and it's
right.
That was kind of a cool, neat piece. So for those people that are listening and don't know what Swim Like a Pro is, give people a little bit of background on kind of where it came from and how it benefits swimmers.
Absolutely. I have a big history in swimming, and here in Clermont, I met my best friend and now business partner in Swim Like a Pro, who's also a swim coach. And we started working together here in Clermont, and we just threw together a camp or a clinic one day. And we called it Swim Like a Pro because at the time I was a professional triathlete. And then as we moved off, and started our own business, we sort of, hung on to that name. It seemed like a good selling point. And, so we use both of, our knowledge and experience and research in swimming to, our main focus is adult triathletes, or master swimmers. We have a huge master swim team as well. But mostly adults. So we focus more on, 40 or 50 year olds that never learned how to put their face in the water, all the way up to, some of our master swimmers that want to, knock a second off of their time at the next meet. So just the full range, but, so we have a kids team and everything, but the Swim Like a Pro is born out of we love the water. I love the water. I'm in the water all the time. I can do anything in the water. I'm comfortable in the water. It's the second home for me. And we're in Florida where it's all water. So
some have gators, some don't.
Yeah. No, Chris, it's just all water.
Okay.
The concepts mean that there are people my age and older and younger adults and everything that don't have just this I'm just going to dive in the water today because it's hot out and I want to just swim a couple laps. Like we want everybody to have that love, you know, to float on the lazy river at the water park, to go down the slide, to swim in the wave pool, to do a triathlon, to do it for fitness, because, you know, what other sport are 80 and 90 year olds able to really do, you know, that isn't destroying their body or that they're still able to do. So that's sort of the concept behind us. That's our focus.
That's awesome. You know, I when you're talking about, you know, there's water everywhere in Florida, I think about the same things that, you know, that we have here in Minnesota is you talk to people and they
say, land of 10,000 lakes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everybody knows how to swim, like, you know, from the dock out to the pontoon. Like, and when you say swim, you're using air quotes. and so
we named that, Chris. because we do that, we call it, can you swim or can you survival swim? You know, and that sort of helps people like describe.
There's doggy paddle and then there's freestyle.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I think we termed that a Tarzan swim.
Yeah.
And turned that into a training thing. But it is true. There's a difference between people that know how to swim, and you think about, you know, the things that can, that's the amazing progress that people make, especially in like the first couple of times that you work with them as a coach. And I would imagine that that you have the same thing down in Florida, that people use the air quotes swim a lot.
Right. Absolutely. And like you said, like I literally think I absolutely love my job because of what you just mentioned. Like it's that first session with that person, whether, you know, of like, dude, I just taught somebody who's 60 to put their face in the water for their first time. Or, you know, this 40-year-old woman swam across the pool, you know, in a deep end and didn't freak out. You know, like it's just so incredibly rewarding to watch these people and to have a job like that. I mean, I wouldn't trade that for the world.
So how is coaching, you know, like your target audience, like 40 to 50 or 60 plus years old, how is coaching an adult different than, you know, I think back to like learning how to swim at like, you know, 4 years old, 5 years old. So how do you coach an adult differently than like a little kiddo?
So differently.
Yeah.
So like, what everybody missed before they were maybe 10 years old was this overthinking that we get now as adults. So, I mean, this target is everybody from like 20 and on, because when you start critical thinking about everything versus when you're 10 and under and your coach says, do it, and you just go do it, versus now with adults, you actually have somebody trying to figure out how to do it, which is terrible. Like, I wish that I could have some magic button in, you know, a 50-year-old's brain that turns off this, well, how am I going to do this? And reverts them back to that 10-year-old that goes, okay, and pushes off the wall and just figures it out naturally and does it. So that's the biggest difference, is just sort of, okay, you know, let's talk about what the only things that you should be thinking about, and let's just ignore everything else and not make it too complicated. And that, big for us. And again, there's, you know, 1,000 other people you can go work with, and we've observed that, but our main thing is, how can we keep it so simple for these beginner swimmers that they're really not trying to think their way through swimming, and they're just sort of understanding that whole feel of figuring it out themselves.
Yeah. It does seem like they want to address everything immediately. I think that like when we talk about, when we try and have people focus or adults focus, I always use the term internal diagnostics, and to try and think about, okay, doing like this, thinking about only
one thing at a time.
Yeah. Maybe two or three things at a time and tuning everything out. Whereas they want to see it all. They want to do it all. And maybe that's the wide-eyed wonder of being a kid, is that they're in it for just to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the interesting dynamic of how, even in triathlon, how people, I would say, new to the sport or new coaches may not grasp on the concept of how it is different to coach a child or a kid than it is an adult. And kids aren't just like little adults, and that's a very
some are.
Yeah, calmness. Yeah, so I've seen some kids with mustaches on Pee-wee hockey teams, and it's like, okay, they drove themselves to this tournament at 9 years old. but it is different now. Sarah, so people may not understand, but you have an extensive swim background before triathlon as well. You swam in college.
I did. Go Gators at the University of Florida.
Go Gators. Gabby,
it's
also
quite the program. Yeah.
Gabby also has that in common, swim background. Now, what disciplines did you swim in college?
Anything that was long and hurt a lot was my specialty.
And that no one stuck around for.
Right.
All the other teammates were going to eat.
Yeah.
And we were stuck swimming. Yep.
I think back, Sarah, when I think of you, there's like the one thing that race that really stands out in my mind is I was a ITU technical official in Des Moines the year that you took the swim preem at the Des Moines race, the draft legal race there. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like you just walked out and could have backstroked that thing because you were so powerful. And I think you walked off with like 5K just for like smoking everybody in the swim. And I was thinking, this is the best sport in the world for her.
It was fun. It was challenging in ITU to have that swim background. I had a couple years of good success, able to pull it all together in the swim, the bike, and the run. Because the saying is you can't win the race in the swim, but you can definitely lose it. Yep. So I had that advantage and it made for good, spectators, like you said, it was fun, hopefully people enjoyed watching, having somebody out in front and leading on the bike and everything. But IQ was a challenge. I mean, you're seeing in the last 4 years, Gwen Jorgensen and these girls are out running these competitive 10K times off the bike. And if you don't have that nowadays, it's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I went through ITU. I did a lot of, non-drafting, Olympic distance races, which took us up to Minnesota and up in your area and everything. So
lot of fun. You were definitely in, I would say not the golden age, but the salad days of triathlon, which are, it's a much different game now today. Races were offering $500,000 prize purses for Olympic distance, mm-hmm. non-draft. And there was a whole different time. How, in your perspective, how has that changed the athletes, I'd say, attention to it or how do they approach, especially from an elite standpoint, how do they approach it differently now that there has to be either you're chasing a little bit of money out there or you have to go this Olympic route, which really is super expensive.
Right. It is. And you're right. I mean, I was extremely lucky in the timing that I was in that sport, in this sport in America with Lifetime Fitness and 5150 and Escape from Alcatraz and St. Anthony's and these fabulous races that we stayed right within the continental United States. So nowadays, what's missing is that sort of distance. And you're pretty much, if you're, saying I'm going to be a professional triathlete, you're down to only two routes, mm-hmm. either the full and half Ironman long distance or the super short draft legal. Super sprint is becoming a international thing with a lot of money up for grabs. You're either this way or that way, where when we were racing in the early 2000s, you had a lot of crossover. You had people going from ITU into non-drafting Olympic races, touching on a 70.3, here and there. And there was a lot of crossover, but it's one way or the other now. You're either long distance or short course. And then I see a lot of other things that are making it harder for professional triathletes. The whole ambassador team things that age group athletes are a part of that mm-hmm. sort of waters down the sponsorship opportunities for actual professional athletes. It's so crazy. It doesn't exist in any other sport. It doesn't exist. Like age groupers are not considered, sponsorship worthy in master swimming, age group running. It's just, and all of that money that these companies are spending their time and effort on, 20 or 50 age groupers, they don't care. They do not want a single pro, they're like, no, not interested. So super challenging to be a beginner pro right now.
Do you think that the blossoming of social media has really hampered the ability to have a professional career in our sport that, like you said, there's, you see age groupers out there that say that they're sponsored when it's really, hey, we're throwing you some shoes or, some free product. It's not, you're not having a professional contract. But that,
right.
the hat, because when you were racing and in that time, there was really no, I mean, maybe Facebook might have been out there a little bit, but it wasn't like the Instagrams and the TikToks and all that.
Right.
Where there's a lot of pressure.
Blogging was a really big thing. I had a hugely popular blog that I was posting and writing about. And, you know, you could follow the travels of an actual professional triathlete. And, you know, I was writing stories for Triathlete Magazine. I mean, USA Triathlon Magazine, you know, about what the national team was up to and everything. So it was sort of, you're right, it was more narrowed on the focus of where you had these idols to follow or, you know, to idolize in the sport. So yeah, the definitely the social media, and you know, you have to, first of all, you have to be a fantastic athlete here to be a pro. And now you have to have the, you know, the skills to be a social media connoisseur. It's time consuming. So
you almost need a full-time job as well to support you because
you
because like, you know, so Gabby is entering in this realm.
I'm a new.
Okay.
She's
not like we're making it seem terrible.
No. She's sitting over. She's going, oh my gosh. What's going on?
No, that's why I work. Extra income.
But you have to, if you think about like, you don't go into triathlon to make money.
No.
You know, we had one of the guys we had on a couple weeks back, Devin Palmer, was a professional for a couple of years. And now now he sells homes. And he's like, I made more selling my first home than I did in a whole year in racing triathlon.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to almost have like, you know, your family or somebody kind of, you know, fit in the bill at this point in time. And I wonder at some point in time, are we going to be putting our pros out of business? Like, will professional triathlon in the way that we see it now exist in 5 years, especially in the path that we're moving down, because we're making it harder and harder and harder to produce those athletes that are professionals. And it's more focused on, you know, either the amateur who is, you know, Instagram worthy or the, you know, the person who's going to go try and win a medal.
Right. Right. And on that end, yeah, we're phasing it out and we're just not offering the races that make it interesting to watch anymore. I mean, you know, what's even visible ITU standard on American soil? We have the upcoming, you know, Claremont and Sarasota races, and then we won't, you know, touch American soil again. We'll be, you know, they'll be up in Canada and everything. I'm assuming you'll see it come back a little bit more since we pulled an Olympics in 2028. So they're starting that legacy triathlon out in LA in order to prep for that.
Yeah.
And they'll always do an ITU race, like, you know, the 4 years before the Olympics in order to, you know, really perfect the race course and make everything run smoothly. But so you're not even seeing the short course really too much on American soil. Yeah, you know, social media is there. And I feel like Super League's doing a great job with, you know, updates, and boy, following them on social media almost makes me want to get out and train again because I'm so super jealous that I missed that opportunity.
But even the Super League folks seem to be like, just a lot of the Super League seems to be populated by the National Federation athletes who are racing ITU. So again, it's almost like it's a
or the other.
Yeah, you're either ITU or you're going to be in long course. And the long course folks now seem to be retired ITU. That's where the ITU athletes are retiring to, right? I mean, that's the Brownlee's retirement. That's the Brownlee's retirement plan. Hey, we're just going to go race Kona.
Everybody,
you know, and it's you know, it's not something that that people are actually, you know, succeeding at. You know, so Sarah, I want to take a moment and kind of tap your brain from a coaching standpoint, because you and I both do some teaching with USA Triathlon, and we've had I've had the pleasure of coming behind you and teaching on the same days you have, and and you probably heard this at some point in time. I reference you many times when I talk about like swimming in level one. And one of the things that I've always wanted to be able to kind of just document a conversation around was, and I have heard you talk about arm recovery and hand entry in open water swimming in the sport of triathlon. And when we coach, you know, there's a difference between, you know, the distance, obviously there's a difference in the start of the race, in the middle and the end. But talk to me about your philosophy about arm recovery and hand entry. Are you the hand has to come and hang below the elbow with a high elbow recovery, or are you it's just about getting that arm out of the water and coming through, and why that is, why you come to that with from your background and from your knowledge?
Absolutely. And again, this stems a lot on working with older people who aren't the super manipulative 7-year-old bodies with, you know, tendons that are super loose and stretchy and everything. So a lot of the times I've seen too often you get a swim coach who's worked their entire career with the, you know, kids up through young ages in the water from day one, and they're able to do things with their bodies and shoulders specifically, since we're talking about that, that you are never going to get a 50-year-old former bodybuilder or, you know, unfit person to ever do. But then you're going to try and take that person, you're going to try and fit them in this ultimate shape that you think a swimmer should look like, because, you know, you've been in a pool with kids your whole life. So while I was one of those people, let's talk about what we did in the 80s when I was a child swimming. We taught, you know, to bring your hand recovery out of the water, keep your hand close to your body, get your elbow up super high, zipper your thumb across, yep, along the side of your body, yep, and, you know, lift it up. Yeah, and lift it up and put it into the water. Then in the 90s, when I was a teenager, as a result of that kind of stuff, as well as, you know, a lot of butterfly and et cetera, I had 2 full shoulder dislocations happen in the pool. I was goofing off both times, but I had shoulders that were able to fully dislocate. Then, you know, backboarded out of the pool, ambulance ride to the hospital, et cetera. So, fortunate to not ever have to have surgery, just rehabbed my butt off, did stretch cords every morning of my entire childhood. I don't ever want to see a stretch cord again. Now, it's the early 2000s. I'm in college with fantastic girls coming back from the Sydney Olympics in 2000, and I'm on this fantastic Florida team coached by Greg Troy, who just recently came from the bowl school. And we're developing a soon to be many time national champions and everything. I came in with 12 women, 4 of them had shoulder surgeries and their career ended after their first year. And I only graduated with about 4 of those 12 who made it through swimming.
That's common.
So yeah, it's a high drop off rate when you're doing things to your body that they shouldn't be doing. So we take that into our adults now that weren't manipulated that way as kids and don't have these super stretchy shoulders that go in crazy positions. And we want to talk about, okay, if you're going to move your arm in this circle 1,000 times or 10,000 times over the course of an Ironman swim, what is efficient? What are you capable of doing? And, you know, what isn't going to cause you to give money to your shoulder orthopedic in a year or two? So that's basically the motivation behind taking, while we do have a swimming background, and yeah, you know, we see how the people are going up and down the pool at the Olympics. That's unrealistic for a majority of the people that we're going to be working with.
So it comes more from the idea of not what is the ideal, but what is functional for the individual, which then plays back into having an assessment of the individual before you can just straight on prescribe, this is what we need to do, this is what we have to do.
Right. And, you know, 99% of our coaching is in person. We're not doing, you know, anything, send us a video and we're going to try and talk you through it or something. You know, we have the people in the water at one of our 3 pools in front of us. We're, you know, we're laying down on the pool deck, demonstrating things, you know, and making sure that they're walking away with something that is, yes, is swimming, is successful swimming, is efficient swimming, but isn't going to injure them or cause them to call us in a week and say, you know, I can't move my arm because my shoulder hurts too much. So, you know, and then just to specify on that, there's that. And then as I transferred from being a pool swimmer and collegiate swimming and Olympic trials and everything, and now I'm taking up more and more triathlon swimming. And that's been my whole life, though. Yeah, your stroke changes.
Yeah, I found that. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, we're talking again about who are we working with? We're working with people that want to be in the open water, and the open water doesn't have lane ropes that stop the waves from the other people. It doesn't have walls with gutters that suck up, you know, all of the chop and everything. So we're talking about an entirely different condition. It's like riding a trainer versus riding on the road. Yeah. Like, you have to have two different skill sets.
So do you promote and more of like a straight arm recovery?
We call it more wide arm.
Wide arm,
you know, just wide arm. Just don't, your hand doesn't need to be anywhere near your body, your shoulder. Our demonstration, and, you know, I'm not on video here, but, you know, imagine your ball and socket joint of your shoulder and think about what that ball and socket is capable of doing and what it isn't capable of doing, and then keeping it in a comfortable position. So yeah, a wide arm, quick recovery. And then again, we get a lot of, we get a lot of people with, we call it the, overenteritis.
Is that like the tomahawk chop where they're slapping it down?
What?
Is that I call it the tomahawk chop where they're coming down and it's like they're fighting, like they're beating up the water almost, like they're just trying to create as much. Maybe I just said that wrong.
No. So overenteritis is super, super controlling of your arm to go in the water. And you see somebody spending like this crazy actual pause in their stroke of, well, let me make sure I don't actually move or splash any water as I gently set my arm into the water. So like that's overenteritis. So we're encouraging more of the, you know, the swinging and the just like gravity, put your arm in the water. Like you don't need to actually do anything. Just get it back in the water.
Because that really helps with like the chop and the turbulence in the water, just to keep you on top of the surface.
Yeah.
And you can keep that turnover up. Yeah.
You have to get your arm around. Like don't slow it down. So yeah.
And it all has to roll into body roll too, and body position. And because I've seen two, like, I was just talking with a client before this a little bit, and she sent me a little bit of video and very flat, you know, her back shoulder blades really didn't even modulate out of the water. And so she was kind of winging around the sides and again, to the point is it's talking about how many times the high elbow would help kind of promote, you know, if you think about the zipper drill and how that promotes body roll, but again, it's not about the specific exactness of what's the ideal entry, but what's functionally optimal for the athlete while still not losing some of those other pieces, which is like the body roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So for open water, I wrote an article once, cause I'd come across some data counted up from possibly Beijing Olympics, maybe the London Olympics. They had taken stroke rate from the 1500 meter pool swimmer, from the 10K open water swimmers, and then the 1500 meter triathlete. And, you know, the open water swimmers and the triathlete medalists, because they did it for the gold, silver, and bronze. So the two in the open water were super similar, up above 80. And then you had the podium for the 1500 meter in the pool with no currents, no waves, no anything, you know, a million-dollar facility that's designed to keep the water from moving. You know, it was down in the low 70s. So we're looking at, you know, somewhere between 10 to 15 difference in the stroke rate from having a successful open water swim to being, a super successful pool swimmer. And that pool swimmer is kicking the whole time. He's kicking hard. He's long and, you know, through the water, because he touches the wall, he's done, you know. So then we go to our open water swimmers who are 10K. That's, you know, that's an hour, 45 minutes of swimming for the guys, you know, close to 2 hours for the women, and our triathletes who then need to save their legs. So they're up in the high 80s. I think the Brownleys were 82 to 86. And that was Javier Gomez was another one. So, you know, what is showing successful open water swimming is quick. You've got people around you can't have this long, gorgeous, you know, swim stroke. You've got to keep yourself moving.
Yeah, that's a very good point, I think, and especially for coaches that are looking at how to train open water in the pool. Those are, I think, essential elements to keep in mind, mm-hmm. that you can simulate, you know, the turbulence of open water, but the cadence of that, I think that may go unrecognized all too often. I know we do talk about the kick and the contribution to heart rate raise that the kick has and how that differentiates.
Right.
But I think the cadence might be a piece that might be overlooked by a lot of coaches. Yeah. Is that something that you address in your training, Gabby?
Yeah, we actually, and I don't know, Sarah, do you use bands at all for swimming? Just like around the ankles?
Right. Yep. We've got those.
Yeah. That's definitely helped at least me personally a lot with stroke turnover. Cause I come from, you know, like that indoor swimming background where I had that nice long flowing stroke, and then going into open water was just like completely different. And I had to get my turnover going. And the one way that we did that was throwing an ankle band on.
And forcing you to
and
do it.
And forcing you to do it, or your hips are going to sink.
You grind your toenails off.
Yep.
Everything's sinking. Yeah. Everything's sinking. Oh, yeah. Bands are great. They see us pulling them out, and, you know, it's going to be a torture session and everything. But, we just don't encourage anybody to have a slow turnover. Again, we have master swimmers and triathlete swimmers. So
yeah,
you know,
they're
we
different.
Just sort of keep our eye on everybody. Yeah.
Everyone's different.
Have you found success with like the tempo trainers, the clip on little trainers that to help people kind of understand what that timing feels like, that swim stroke rate?
Some people have definitely latched onto those and have, you know, worked on changing their stroke rate and everything. But again, mostly what we do is just a sort of a change in that arm position on the recovery. And, it just sort of automatically just sort of, oh, I don't need to, you know, fight gravity and slowly hold my arm up above the water. That's not doing anything for me. And then they automatically just sort of fall into this quicker stroke rate as a result.
Have you, when you're doing this, when you're changing people over, what are some of the things that you're seeing that athletes are making as a mistake when they're trying to change over this, like a common things that you're saying, nope, we don't want to do that. We don't want to see that happen. We want to focus on keeping this outside of just the recovery.
Exactly what you mentioned, sort of that sort of like tomahawk, like I'm trying to kill the water.
Yep.
We want their arm to swing around and sort of drop and plop into the water. But we don't, again, we're not taking away you using energy of slowly moving your arm and now just changing it to you bashing your arm into the water. We're trying to take away all the energy and just let your arm swing and just let gravity, you know, let it drop in the water. So yeah, sort of like I'm trying to kill the water every time I
smash,
put my arm in the
Hulk
water.
Smash.
I've
seen that. I've also noticed that many times trying to get an athlete to increase turnover, they sacrifice the stroke length. And so they end up kind of almost doggy paddling and I don't know if that's been your perception too, but especially with athletes who have a hard time or it seems like have a difficult time to optimize early vertical forearm when they eliminate where the vast majority of their velocity is being created, that's something I've looked at and tried to say, hey, don't do that. Like, make sure that we have at least, you know, a reasonable amount of stroke length instead of sacrificing that for just the timing.
Yep. We do a lot with our swim sticks, which we're still, you know, packaged up and we've got tons of PVC pipes cut in 12-inch lengths. So while we're sort of combining those two things together, we're making sure that they're doing a long catch-up drill with the swim stick in their hand out in front to prevent crossing the center line. And then, you know, maybe brushing their thumb across their thigh to make sure they're getting that back end to their stroke, but then just swinging their arm around and dropping it, chopping it into the water and grabbing the stick and doing it with the next hand. So from the initiation, when we're pretty, you know, a stick probably goes in, you know, 75 to 85% of our beginner swimmers' hands at some point to encourage both, you know, the long, full stroke all the way from the front all the way to the back, and then quickly getting the arm around and in back into the water in order to take another stroke.
That's good. That's something I think every triathlete needs to have in their little bag of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the bands are one. I like to have the bands in there, but then the swim stick is something that, you know, especially when you get like sophomore triathletes have been in a couple years and they're like, oh, I don't need any of that stuff anymore. I don't need to. Right. No, you can always go back to learn more drills.
Yeah.
Because eventually you're going to fall back into those terrible habits that you brought the first day that you came to swimming.
Yeah.
It's important to have.
It is.
So those are all great things. Sarah, where are we going to see you next out? You're going to be at the Paco race and the ITU race down in Sarasota?
In Claremont? Yeah, I'll actually be at both. I'm right here in Claremont. I've got one of my youth athletes will be racing her first 13 to 15 draft legal race.
Ooh.
I've got a couple of the dads in our group that want to try the age group draft legal, because why not?
Absolutely.
And then the following weekend, I will be... No, there is a Sarasota race I miss, and then I'll be in Sarasota for the actual World Cup.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the March 21st, 22nd weekend. I'm announcing at the...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
At you the get top to... of the Nathan Benderson building, and I'll be...
That's such...
Everyone will be forced to listen to my voice.
You get the fun spot. I've got to be on the golf court. I'll be out in the run course, and you get to stay in the air conditioning.
Yes, and, I do. Which in March in Florida, sadly, is probably necessary.
I know. And you're the one that ate all the good granola bars and left all the crappy ones last time, all the raisin ones, I think. At least I'm going to blame you for it.
I'm talking the whole time. When do you think I'm eating?
Oh, well, cool. I'm looking forward to being able to see you down there and catch up face to face. I'll be at both of those events. I'll be with I'll be at the Patco race with Chris Palmquist coaching with the paratriathlon.
Good.
Team.
Okay. I'm announcing that as well.
Awesome. So we'll see you at both of those. And then the juniors you're referring to, that's your Slappers program, which I love how that
I
think that's a great name, Slappers.
It just came together.
It works so well. And so we have that. So if people want to find out more about you, we have swimlikeapro.com and we also have sarahmcclarty.com. The SLAP program that's Swim Like a Pro. That's the short term is just SLAP, correct?
Yeah, SLAP. We thought, what a great thing. It came up with an acronym and then, so we've got a team name.
And all of your upcoming clinics are on there where if people wanted to get the chance to travel to you, to see you, to train with you,
of course.
We can have all the information and contact you on there. Is that right?
Of course. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Gabby, do you have any other questions you have for Sarah today?
No, this was really fun. It's kind of nice to talk to another swimmer for a
change. Yeah.
I'm going to take that as not a dig on me. Hopefully that was not a dig on me, right?
No.
Your delay said everything.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, we can't thank you enough for being on the program today. And
thank you.
And if for everybody out there, check out the Swim Like a Pro program. If you have the chance, definitely it's worth the investment. You will come away a better swimmer, guaranteed. If you don't, I'll give you a T-shirt or something.
Well, thanks, guys.
And
that's all we need.
Yeah, and we'll look forward to seeing you again. Gabby, thanks for coming back up and hanging out, and thanks for flying home directly and being part of this.
Make a trip to HQ.
I know. Well, you gotta definitely make your sightseeing. Otherwise, Devin's gonna try and take your spot on the couch here.
Jeez.
I know. Don't worry. I won't let that happen.
Okay.
I won't let that happen. For everybody, thank you for listening again today. Remember, we have our new new Be Better T-shirts to represent
They're
your podcast.
They're sitting right here in HQ, and they look pretty cool.
I know. Gabby's gonna get one as she walks out.
Ooh.
Maybe K3PO will get one too. If he's lucky.
Yeah.
But remember to subscribe on iTunes, and also remember we're on Spotify, and leave us a little bit of message if you liked it. If you have any questions for us, leave that for us also. We'd love to answer. And if you have any ideas and people you'd like to hear us talk to, we'd also like to hear that as well. So Gabby, on behalf of Sarah and myself, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
And we will look forward to seeing you guys next time. For now, be better.